Bad News Ramen. Better have my donuts here for, is that correct? 63?
That is correct. Yes.
All right, because I knew there was a number discrepancy last week.
There's an idiom.
Idiosyncrasy.
An idiom. What's that word? Idiom, sir? Idiom.
Idiom. I mean, I really don't know why we're doing this. There's really nothing to talk about. It's not like anything
happened.
Yeah,
nothing happened at all. So we had, you know, we had the Royal Rumble, then we had a Raw, and then there's some like type of news, and we don't know. You know, I've heard inklings here and there.
To throw it way back to the super fans on Saturday Night Live, a certain professional wrestler from a certain Midwestern town decided he wanted to take his ball and go home, perhaps?
I like your Ricardo Montalban a lot better. Can you do that in the Ricardo Montalban voice?
No.
Not on cue, huh?
No.
I still can't do it on cue.
No, again, it's going to come out sounding like Martel.
One shot, and you're in the royal box. Okay, so question I have for you then. Worker or shoot? CM Punk leaving the WWE.
I think it's a shoot, man. I mean, I think if anyone would have the ability to, like, have it actually be a work and keep it a secret, it would either be Punk or Jericho. It seemed like those are the two guys that are the best at keeping that stuff quiet.
You're saying CM Punk is the best in the world at keeping that quiet?
Him and Jericho.
Yeah, okay. You didn't get the best in the world reference?
No, I did.
Okay. But I'm just saying, it wasn't good? Is that what you're saying?
I still have to keep... I can't say...
You're still in shock. You're still angry.
I can't say clearly he's better at it than Jericho, because that remains to be seen. Because Jericho... keeping it secret that he was going to be in the Rumble until he appeared last year. That was pretty unheard of in this day and age. But from everything I'm reading, and it sounds like it's a shoot. And I think it kind of goes back to the stuff we were saying the last few weeks about, like, watching CM Punk, and, like, yeah, his matches were still good, but there was just something that didn't seem like... it seemed like it was kind of missing.
Well, you heard the two things, right? It's that he's been sick for like 2-3 months, and
I didn't know he was
sick. Yeah, so he's been sick for 2-3 months. They don't know what it is, you know, why he's sick, and then he started eating meat again too, to try to figure out what it is. So that's why he looks so lethargic in the ring, because he didn't have that zip that he used to have. I don't want it to be a shoot. I want it to be a work. There's a couple things why. I mean, and so I was kind of thinking before we were doing this, like, you know, instead of saying, like, well, I think it's that. I think you can probably say 50-50. It's either a work or a shoot. So one of the biggest reasons why I would want to think it's a work is because a similar thing happened with Austin. You know, Austin tucktail, or not, he didn't tucktail. He had a difference of opinion with creative. And how you have, you know, the funny thing is everybody says that Punk is, you know, his own person, this, that, and this. But I don't know as a company how you could let someone like Steve Austin go, and then you have someone that like CM Punk go. Now, Austin was like the guy in the company. He was like the number one guy. They were trying to branch off a little bit, you know, not make him the guy with some of the stories they were doing. But Punk, you know, Punk is the guy to the meta fans, right? To like me and you, he's the man. Now, within the company, he's not. So WWE has a history, especially with like a superstar like Austin, to let a guy go like that too. And when that happened, that Raw that it happened, they actually like devoted a segment to it, saying that, and I think they even had someone come out in the ring. Maybe McMahon came out in the ring, or maybe it was Jim Ross. I'm not sure who it was. But they had like this kind of big announcement that he left the company. Well, the only difference between that was that it was like right before the show, mm-hmm. and McMahon ordered this huge rewrite because he wasn't happy with the way the show was going. And a couple of things that Punk was, you know, hearsay was that I guess they wanted him to say that he suffered a concussion, and he didn't want to do that to the fans and say that I don't want to say that. So there's those two kind of elements. One is that they didn't make a big announcement about it like they did with Austin, and two, it's like kind of like storyline wise, especially the way he was walking off the Royal Rumble, he was playing that he was hurt, right? Yeah, I mean, that trainer had more airtime in the Royal Rumble than some of the big superstars did. And so he's walking back with the trainer and stuff, so they're kind of working it, you know, like it's going to be a work for the next storyline. And then there's some discussion about he doesn't want to say that. So he can come across way better if he comes back, like, say, in a month or whatever, and say, hey, you know, I'm not going to do that to you fans. And then he can throw one of his, you know, pipe bombs. It's funny that people forget that his pipe bomb, they gave him carte blanche with the mic. But that was part of their storyline. That's what they wanted to do. Everybody thinks like his pipe bomb was like he was bashing against the company. No, the company allowed him to do that. Mm-hmm. And they cut him off when he started that whole, and he started talking about the bullying campaign and stuff. And he's going to say something about McMahon. They cut him off. So they're kind of like, it's like a work shoot. You know, it's within a certain parameter. Mm-hmm. So, I mean, anything could happen where and I'm clinging on to hope here that this is what it is. Like, they didn't have Austin, you know, they didn't have the Austin treatment. And this kind of opens them up for another kind of work shoot where he can just explode like he did before. Plus, they could get a ton of hype with that, because his first work shoot, I mean, he was on every radio station or major, you know, CNN and everything. So this might be a way for them again to get back in the limelight, you know, and the WWE on the spotlight to cross over. Because Punk, I think Cena can cross over, but Cena can't cross over. Cena is recognized as the face of the company, but he can't cross over like a Rock. Well, when CM Punk did that pipe bomb, I mean, he exploded the national media. The national media was talking about it, and maybe they want that again. So that's one reason why I can say that this could be a work. But I'm more probably leaning towards a shoot, because this guy walks his own walk. He leaves on his, you know, he lives by his own terms, and he says he has plenty of money in the bank. He's not worried about money, and you know, he can take time off, and you know, he basically says when he's done, he's done. And he's been alluding to that for the past couple, 2-3 months. Yeah. So,
yeah, and the thing is, it's not like there's been plenty of groundwork laid through the people that they say like they're pretty close friends or close to the situation that he's been unhappy. So it's not like this just comes out of nowhere, right? So that you know, it seems like it's been built to. That is kind of why I think it's a shoot. And I think regardless, you know, he'll be back at some point. And it may even be, I mean, because I think a lot of the frustration sounds like you keep having these guys that come out of nowhere and they haven't been wrestling for a long time.
For 3 years running for WrestleMania.
Right. And, yeah. And then they keep jumping the spot. Maybe, in his eyes, maybe he needs to go away so that they realize what they're missing, and then that's the way he gets back to his spot. Maybe that could be part of it, too. But
so you're opening up a perfect segue right now. You want to finish on Punk and then kind of go where I want to go, or where you're kind of segueing into who we're talking about, you know, if you will.
I guess that means you want to talk about Batista then.
Well, I mean, do you have like a couple reasons why you think it would be a work, or a couple reasons why it would be a shoot? I mean, because I think you're kind of leaning towards that it's more of a shoot than anything else.
Yeah, I think it's a shoot, but I don't think the bridge is burned. I mean, I think he probably has some legitimate gripes, and I think some of it has to do with his treatment, and honestly, I would think some of it has to do with the way Daniel Bryan's been treated. And I think that's kind of what a real, you know, when you're talking about like the moral authority in the locker room, you know, I think that was also him asserting that too. Because, you know, Cena can go out there like all he wants and talk about how great Daniel Bryan is, but he's not doing anything to help the guy. Whereas, like, I think CM Punk truly feels like, you know, why the hell are you burying this guy? I think a lot of it has to do with the way he's being treated or feels like he's being treated, but I think he also dislikes what he sees towards Daniel Bryan as well. So I can see where he kind of decides to take a stand, and especially, yeah, I mean, this card for WrestleMania, I don't know, just like every time I keep seeing a projection, it kind of looks worse and worse, right? It's like, okay, now Sheamus is back, which, I mean, I'm not going to throw him in as a part-timer. I know he got hurt legit, but, you know, there's a lot of guys that have surpassed him, and he hasn't earned the spot that it looks like he's going to get thrown into. And putting him in Daniel Bryan, I mean, that really doesn't seem to do anything for Daniel Bryan to me, really. Now, you know, they're trying to figure out how to get Hogan in, you know, Sting. So they're saying like either has either signed a contract or is about to. And it's like, why are you bringing all these guys in that can't even hold a candle? Even some of these guys, like Sting on his best day, didn't even come close to what CM Punk has been doing over the last year and a half. And now he's like the Terrell Davis of wrestling. Like, had like the shortest prime in the history
guys. I think I just got a call from Crazy Johnny. I think I think his ears are ringing.
Oh, yeah.
The ears will be ringing.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, he's 20 years, at least 20 years past his prime. But they're going to bring him in for this run for whatever reason. I mean, they got all they need right there. The other thing I'd say is I kind of feel like they might have to face, like WWE Creative might have to face a shift sometime soon, because
Are you going to apply for the job or what?
No, it's just, it's becoming real overwhelming, like the amount of support in every single city for these guys that they refuse to put over. When you have like this guy that you make this big deal, like Batista's going to be your guy, and he comes out there and all he gets is Daniel Bryan chants. I mean, the WWE can still kind of try to pretend that the yes chant is more over than Daniel Bryan, but they're really just fooling themselves at this point if they keep telling themselves that.
And I was thinking about this today, and this is something I wanted to bring up because it's very easy for us, and I know I use that as a cliche a lot. It's very easy for us to say that the Royal Rumble sucked, this, that, and this, and Batista. I mean, we're sitting there watching the Royal Rumble, and we're kind of waiting for Daniel Bryan to come out. And number 30 comes around, and it's Rey Mysterio, which is probably the worst guy that you can bring out while everybody's waiting for Daniel Bryan. Mm-hmm. So I'm sitting there with the producer, and we're watching, because we all went over to your house and watched it. My two girls watched it and everything, too. And so I'm looking at the producer. I'm like, well, are they going to have, like, maybe 33 guys or 34 guys? Maybe they extend it or whatever it is. And we have been saying this for a long time. We said this on the very first podcast. Smooth scale number one and smooth scale 63 now. We've been doing this for close about more than 2 years that we've been doing this. And we said that when you don't have any competition, today's Thursday. I was like, well, I got some time. Maybe I'll put on TNA. I couldn't find it. And here's the thing. I can do a search for TNA and find the station for it, but I just didn't care. I was like, well, if I can't find it easily, then I don't need to watch it. I can watch Mr. 3000 with Bernie Mac. You know, so Kitchen Nightmares is on. You know, I was like, I'd rather watch Kitchen Nightmares than TNA. So they don't have any competition whatsoever. And when you don't have competition, you can pretty much do whatever you want to do. This is the first, it's like a boiling point. This is like the first pay-per-view where everybody's been saying for the past three or four pay-per-views, like, we couldn't say about SummerSlam. SummerSlam, yeah. If SummerSlam played out after the way that we thought it would, where Daniel Bryan would get, like, his push and he'd be a champion, then by all means, SummerSlam was great. SummerSlam was a very good pay-per-view. But that was one good pay-per-view out of how many? The ladder matches and stuff, or the
Money in the Bank.
Yeah, Money in the Bank. That was a good pay-per-view. Yeah. That was a fun pay-per-view. Mm-hmm. So you have everybody complaining all the time. It's like, oh, you know, this pay-per-view sucked. This pay-per-view sucked. Raw sucks. SmackDown sucked. Main Event sucks. You know, they're saying it over and over again. But then all of a sudden you have one guy that comes out and just rips them a new one. Two guys, actually. So you have Mick Foley on Twitter just tweeting his ass off saying, you need to take care of the fans. You need to take care of the fans. So now all of these fans that just said, hey, this sucks, now they have someone that's within the business that said it. Mm-hmm. Then you had Jim Ross saying the exact same thing. He's like, you got to take care of the fans. You need to take care of the fans. And what I'm saying is like, okay, yeah, that's nice, but they don't need to take care of the fans because I'm not going to go and start watching TNA. There's not a point where I'm going like, I am so fed up, I'm going to go watch TNA because TNA is just as bad.
If Punk walks for real, are you going to stop watching wrestling?
No, I probably won't.
No?
No.
Because I think you had hinted at that a few times.
Here's the thing. I would rather see Punk at his best and leave than do what he's been doing for the past month and a half or 2 months, where he doesn't look good in the ring. Because some of his aura was, like, fading. Because he wasn't having great matches. And you know he's good. You could tell there was something wrong with him. And I'm suddenly going, like, what the hell is going on with Punk? Because 2 months ago, he looked fine. Mm-hmm. But then when Cena started not performing against Seth Rollins, and then he starts having these really slow, lethargic matches, and it's like, dude, I don't want to see him like this. I don't want to see my favorite wrestler of this era. I have a handful of five favorite wrestlers, whatever it is. He's definitely there. And to tell you the truth, he is not that far, at least for me, with his run that he had. He's not that far from Ric Flair. Yeah, I loved Ric Flair. And Ric Flair in his prime, I mean, that's like Lou Gehrig to me, you know? Lou Gehrig, Joe DiMaggio. I mean, that's Ric Flair, right? CM Punk is like a Jeter, or like, say, like an Ichiro, or like a Vladimir Guerrero. You know, like guys that I really, really like, and it's like, who, like, I've seen played during my lifetime. It's like, man, these are going to be he's going to be one of my all-time favorites. And when I start comparing him to, say, like a Gehrig or a Babe Ruth or a DiMaggio, it's like, well, you can't do it because they're there first. Well, CM Punk is right under Ric Flair to me. And I'd rather see him leave and have that good memory in my mind of all the stuff that he's given us over the past 2.5 years. I mean, he brought me back into wrestling. The Rock made me start watching it. But CM Punk was the one that made me start to watch wrestling. And then not only, like, watch wrestling, but then start being kayfabe about it. You know, be kayfabe about Daniel Bryan. Be kayfabe about Bray Wyatt. Buying into Damian Sandow. You know, watching you talk about Ziggler and then going like, yeah, you know, you're right about Ziggler. I mean, he got me into the whole culture of, like, following guys again. You know, I think a lot of that was lost when Chris Benoit died. And we did that whole thing. It's like, you know, Benoit was one of, you know, he's not on my five anymore. But Benoit was, like, my favorite wrestler for a long time. Yeah. And he brought me back into, like, you know, kind of a Robert DeBruce, you know. It's like, I don't want to lose heart. You know, I want to believe, you know. And CM Punk made me believe about the profession. And what is the most frustrating thing about it is that they're doing the exact same thing they have done for the past 2 years. You can't have a WrestleMania with a main event that you don't care about. Every main event that's been involved for the past year, I have not cared about. I've cared about every other match except for that main event. And it's just, I'm going like, how long are we going to be subjected to, not so much Randy Orton. You know, if you have Randy Orton and Daniel Bryan have 2 or 3 pay-per-view matches, we're going to watch it. And if Randy Orton wins, I'm not going to have a problem with that because I'm going to watch a good match. Right?
Yeah.
But when you have Batista and Randy Orton, or
Cena and Randy Orton.
Yeah, I mean, Cena and Randy Orton, it's like, my girls are watching and there's kind of waiting. You know, we're all waiting for the Royal Rumble and we really don't care about the match. Now, the last 5 minutes of that match, well, I can't even say it was good. I mean, we were just mocking all the kickouts that everybody was doing. Mm-hmm. It's like, they can't do anything else, so what are they go to the old tried and true method. I'm talking about Cena and Randy Orton of doing finishers that they kick out of and then doing the other person's finishers because it's supposed to shock me. It's like, I have seen this before. Yeah. This is no big deal for me. The only thing that saved that match was the Wyatt family. That was it. Yeah. And at least when the Wyatt family came, I'm like, thank God. It's like, okay, good. The match is going to be over. And we can finally have, like, I can at least have the Wyatt family, you know, play a big part in WWE programming. And then they're going to get squashed at WrestleMania or get squashed at the next pay-per-view like John Cena does in great fashion. So it's a case of they're constantly letting down fans, and this is where we're left at. And now you're starting to have people come out of the woodwork that have worked there before, respected people, and people that are on good terms with the WWE have never bashed the WWE. Especially, you know, that's your biggest complaint about Jim Ross, is that right. He doesn't, and he finally bashes them, and then he kind of, you know, then he has some thoughtful tweets after that. But he came out and said, "Hey, you can't do this anymore."
Yeah, and that's the thing is, I sit there and you see the heat that Daniel Bryan got from the crowd in that Bray Wyatt match, and that Bray Wyatt got them. I mean, that was a great match.
That was one of the best matches I've seen in a long time.
Yeah, and I think, you know, I think we said, like, that's like the early candidate for match of the year. I don't think there's much question about that. And the fans completely going nuts for it. And you get, you know, that was awesome that, you know, you don't get to see that many. That thing had to be at least a 30-minute match. I haven't timed it. I'm probably going to go back and watch it and just clock it and just see how long it was. It could have gone close to 40.
Yeah.
The thing seemed like it went on forever, and, you know, I could have kept watching for another 30 minutes, no problem. But to see the reaction that those guys get from that crowd, and then you turn around and put in this main event that you've been trying to build up as, like, the biggest match that there ever was.
The biggest rematch ever.
And nobody cared.
Yeah.
Nobody at all cared.
And the best thing about that whole thing is that they're saying, we want Divas. And it's like that is, to me, is like, how better can you get in saying that?
Yeah, the fans are cheering for Daniel Bryan. They're cheering for Divas instead of the match. There's boring chants. I mean, there was everything you could possibly want. And I just don't know. It's just the arrogance of WWE that they're going to keep doing this, or this whole thing they know better than what the fans know. I don't know what the purpose is. But at some point, I think it's going to catch up to them. And I think it's, you know, they've been doing it forever. And they always, you know, said they know better what the fans want than the fans do. And that's always kind of been the mantra. And it's gotten by for a while. And a lot of it, like we said, is because of the lack of competition. But I think at some point it's going to catch up to them, and they're going to have to realize, no, you know, we got to do something different. Because I think at some point people just aren't going to care anymore.
especially when it comes to the Road to WrestleMania. And the funniest thing about when they start saying the Road to WrestleMania, they're like, hey, it's the Road to WrestleMania. Here we go, right? Uh-huh. And we go, we're like, oh, fuck. You're like, oh, here we go. Now we're going to be subjected to boring-ass wrestling for the next 3-4 months or whatever it is. And this is the bad time of wrestling. This is like the off-season of wrestling. The Road to WrestleMania is the off-season because you know you're going to get stars that you don't want to watch. You're going to get
pushes that don't make any sense.
Yeah. So let me ask you a question then. So you asked me about CM Punk, if he stopped and whether I would watch. I would still watch just because there's certain guys that I like, and there's still some entertaining things that I watch. Like, I thought the Usos and Biggie Langston versus 3MB for the main event yesterday, I thought that was a fun match. It wasn't compelling. It wasn't like, I never thought that 3MB was ever going to win. I knew they were going to lose. I knew it was going to be a squash, but it was a fun match to watch.
Yeah.
And Bray Wyatt, I mean, that is the first good match I've seen this guy have since he was Husky Harris. And I think a lot of it has to do with Daniel Bryan. But we can save this match towards the end of this podcast. But that was a very good match. And then you have New Age Outlaws and the Rose Brothers. Just an old school match. An old school back and forth match. The heels win in perfect fashion. I just thought it was a great homage to old time wrestling.
Yeah, it was like, you know, you got the two matches that are supposed to be the lowest on the card, like, you know, not including Rumble, right, is the tag team match and Daniel Bryan and Bray Wyatt. And those are by far the better matches and by far got the better reactions. It's hard to even call Brock Lesnar and Big Show a match. I mean, I think it got the job done, but it was, you know, it wasn't nothing I don't see pretty much every other week with Brock Lesnar. And then, you know, I don't think the match between Cena and Randy Orton was terrible, but the thing is, you got those guys trying to go after what Bray Wyatt and Daniel Bryan just did. It does make it seem boring. And the build, it didn't live up to anywhere near what the build was. Now, if that's your...
Because who did everybody want to see?
Daniel Bryan.
Exactly.
And now, if that's the main event on a random Raw, and they put that exact same match on, I'm like, yeah, that's a pretty solid match. I don't think it was a terrible match. But it didn't live up to anywhere what they built it to be, it's not even in the same ballpark as the opening match that they had. And then you go to the Rumble, and I think the Rumble's taken a lot of unnecessary heat online by saying that the Rumble match sucked. I thought that was actually one of the better Rumble matches I've seen on the overall of it, but the ending was fucking terrible, because you got Batista that they're trying to push as this guy that... And he's supposed to be this baby face that absolutely nobody gives a fuck about.
And the best thing you said all night long was, remember what you said when it was just those two guys left?
I had so many interesting comments that night.
Very nice. But you said, who's the heel here? You know, who's the heel? Who's supposed to be the heel? Because Reigns was getting... And it's just like the whole thing is like, you know Reigns is not going to win. And it's like every pay-per-view main event... It's like you're sitting there and you're going, okay, that's it? You know, because like it's like, okay, so they're going to, even though there's overwhelmingly odds for the fans, what they want to see, and the storylines that you could develop with that, it's like, okay, I'm going home empty-handed again. And the only thing that's saving it is a Daniel Bryan match and a CM Punk match. So those are the only two matches that save it. Mm-hmm. And then you get, you know, you might get like a tag team here or there or whatever. And it's just kind of, yeah, it's like I'm done watching it and going like, what was the point of that? What was the point of that? It's like you have all of this upswell for anything to happen, anything to change the status quo. People are tired of the status quo. And every time you're delivering the status quo at the end and nobody's happy about it. And you can sit there and say like, well, Twitter's a negative place anyways. Well, you could say that, but it's not negative because... What's happening in the stadium, or what's happening at the event's being held? They're saying the exact same thing.
Yeah.
So every wrestling fan is, are we negative as wrestling fans? I don't think we are. I mean, we embrace Daniel Bryan, we embrace CM Punk, we love the Shield, we love Bray Wyatt. You know, it's like we like Dolph Ziggler. I mean, Dolph Ziggler got a crazy pop. People are chanting for Dolph. Mm-hmm. So it's not like we're negative people. It's like wrestling fans like the people that work their asses off, and the people that always work their asses off, they're always the underdogs, so we're always going to like the underdog. And that's, isn't that what wrestling is? It's like, it's funny, like, I watched the end of, like, my daughter, my oldest daughter had a play date, so my youngest daughter, she's like, well, can we watch either, like, wrestling or, like, a movie or something, you know, when we got home from school? And I was like, yeah, sure. And I was like, well, here, let me show you some history. Let me show you that Hulk Hogan match, you know, Bash at the Beach, right? Mm-hmm. And then I got into the actual documentary part of it. And one thing that Booker T said was that, he's like, look, he's like, NWO is great. He's all, but the good guys is supposed to win. In the end, the white horse has to win. He's like, well, NWO always won. Well, this is kind of the same thing. It's like and I don't want to say it's the authority, but whoever WWE Creative wants to push, they're the ones that are always going to win. And we do not care about any of the guys that they want to push. And so the question I have for you, you like that, huh? The question I have for you is, okay, so you asked me about CM Punk. I'm still going to watch because there's people that I like. But you, now you never come out and said that, you like Daniel Bryan, you respect him, but you're not a big fan of his. I mean,
I'm a pretty good.
Yeah,
I like to watch.
Yeah, you like to watch his matches. Yeah. The other guy you like to watch is Dolph Ziggler, and he's buried way, way, way down. And now you have CM Punk out of the mix. What makes you continue to watch?
There's still plenty of guys out there that I like. I mean, The Shield would be a big reason. Daniel Bryan. I'm resorted to having to watch strictly for the matches, and less be interested in the story because the story is getting worse and worse. So that's kind of what it is. I like watching the matches. I respect what these guys go through to be, like, the best, and just this whole idea that, you know, it's not like pro sports where, you know, whoever is the champion at the end of the day, you're like, okay, yeah, that team was the best this year, and you just got to swallow and eat it because it's a work. So, you know, you get to watch and see, like, these guys that, even though they're never going to get to the top, to see how much work, how much better they get on the mic and the ring. Like, you know, see how funny some of these guys are. You know, there's a lot of reasons that I like to watch. I think it's a really deep roster. We've been saying that for a couple of years. Not just because they're burying, like, 75% of this young talent that could really be and should be taken over at this point. You know, it basically, they've held themselves back, as far as I'm concerned, in terms of most of the decisions they're making on creative. But those guys still go out and put on a great match pretty much every night. So that's the reason why I'm watching. Like, you know, the Rhodes guys, they put on a good match every time. The Outlaws, they're really entertaining, and it's good to see them back again. The Usos are just getting better and better. Like, as stupid as the Real Americans gimmick is, like, Cesaro's great to watch, and Swagger's a good second guy on the tag team. I mean, I can't stand when I have to see this guy job out to Rey Mysterio twice a week. But, you know, he's good at what he does. Not a main eventer by any means, but he's a good worker. You got all these guys that are really good workers. Some of them really good on the mic. And that's what I'm watching for.
But you're never going to get a payoff, though.
Right. I've resorted to that. I'll never get a payoff. And if I get to the point where I'm just sick of it, I could see. I mean, I don't feel like just because CM Punk walks right now that I'm going to stop watching wrestling. But I could see that if this becomes a trend and things continue to go that way, I could see where I get turned off at some point.
At some point, yeah. I mean, it's been a year or 2 years of us saying the same thing. And the biggest criticism I have for WWE is, like, I know why they're – I have a feeling why they do it is because they want market share. They want to kind of appeal to mass media, especially around WrestleMania time. But the whole thing is that they are doing – them as a company, they're doing something that no other TV show can do or any type of entertainment can do, right? The NFL Super Bowl, right? Okay, that's going to be taken over on Twitter, right? The Breaking Bad finale, taken over on Twitter. I mean, Twitter almost broke with Breaking Bad. It's going to break almost with Super Bowl, right? Raw does it every flipping week. And pay-per-views do it every single time. They trend worldwide every single time Raw is on. Even though you have Monday Night Football that beats them in ratings, Raw is still the number one most trending topic on Twitter every time it's on Monday. And then every pay-per-view is the exact same thing. It's like they found the secret to dominate social media, and instead of saying, like, hey, okay, so now we can do whatever the hell we want, they're like, well, let's keep it going. Or it's like, well, we have to, you know, I don't know what they're thinking, but it's like they can do whatever the hell they want to do because they're doing whatever the hell they want to do on Twitter. And they're going to have the WWE Network. They're going to make a ton on WWE Network. It's a great deal. So they're in position to do all this stuff that no other company can do, right? Roll out. I mean, they're going to roll out the WWE Network, right? And they're saying you have to pay for it, okay? And 75% of the people are going to pay for it. The only reason why I'm not paying for it is because I can't stream because I'm in the heart of Silicon Valley and they don't have any internet in the heart of Silicon Valley. So that's why I can't watch it. I have to go to some place called Milpitas where they have it, or some place called Elk Grove. Have you heard of those two places? If we're on a national stage, nobody's heard of that, but they've heard of Silicon Valley. I can't get internet. You guys can. So they're rolling all this new stuff. It's everything's successful. I think the only thing that hasn't been successful with them is Tout. Tout's the only failure they ever had, right? Mm-hmm. But who cares?
And the XFL.
XFL, but that was, yeah. But that was, yeah, he hate me. That was a long time ago.
Yeah.
You know?
I'm just saying. We're being fair.
Yeah. So, but instead of being groundbreaking in their programming and drawing in more people and creating a buzz by, saying, having Roman Reigns win the Royal Rumble or have Daniel Bryan win the Royal Rumble or whatever it is, instead of being groundbreaking in that sense and having the shock value of pushing these guys, that it's not a shock that they should be pushed or that they would win. It's just because finally they're taking care of what every person, every fan that they have, real fan that they have, they're pushing the guys that we want to see win. That's a shock value. Mm-hmm. And they can run with that guy, run with those guys. Now, is Roman Reigns maybe 6 months away? I still think he is. But if he would have won the Royal Rumble, I wouldn't go like, oh, he's been given too much too fast. Everybody's behind the guy.
He's closer to being a legit main eventer than Batista is. And I think that's what the issue is.
we're having that podcast, huh?
It's just, yeah, I guess so. I mean,
we have the one podcast every year where you just like throw your hands up in the air and go like, ah, oh, fuck it, right?
I thought it was a solid enough pay-per-view, man. But it's just, okay, you got Roman Reigns, who's been running roughshod over the company for about a year and a half. And then you got a guy who hasn't stepped in a ring in 3 years. And the best he can do is just, like, sidestep someone charging him and throw him over the top rope. And the thing is, nobody fucking cares about Batista. And that's the thing. And the other thing that's kind of gets frustrating to me is, like, it's like, you know how they always had made this argument about how the BCS in college football, and like all these idiots made this argument that, well, even though the system sucks, people are always arguing about it, and since they're talking about it, that's good for business. And that's exactly the move they make. Like, everyone's hating the fact that Batista won, and WWE looks at it like, well, you know, they're talking about Batista, and that's really what matters. Whereas, I mean, the best thing that probably internet people should do is just not even mention that motherfucker. And that's really what it comes down to. But you know that's not going to happen. And it's just like this dislike that people have of him, it's grounded in pretty good reasoning. And I don't hate Batista. I was fine with Batista coming back. But if he can't perform, you know, he is not The Rock.
Yeah.
Charisma-wise or ring work-wise. He isn't and never was. And it's pretty obvious that he was the second choice, and because they couldn't get The Rock, that's the best thing that they felt like they could go to. But does that make him automatically deserving to be in this spot that you got these all these other young guys? I mean, don't you think you should try to make new stars at some point? I mean, I would think that makes sense.
And the thing is that it's not like they're scrambling to make new stars. They have the new stars already. All they need is and I don't want to say, because push, you know, push can mean a lot of different things, but at least give them the opportunity, right?
Right.
And so you're kind of looking about, you know, you're talking about Batista, and then you're talking about how Orton and Cena had to do a better job than the tag team match, which was given away for free, and Batista and Daniel Bryan. Well, back in the 80s, if you couldn't outperform the early matches, then you weren't in that spot for that long time,
right?
And that's kind of the other thing too, why I said that there's no competition. It's like these guys are allowed to keep on being in the spot even though they can't outperform the other people. That's a problem. Then not only is that a problem for the fans, not only is that a problem for the company, but I really question the work ethic of these two guys if they're not trying to bring the house down after the house was already brought down with these two early matches. And the reason why I say that is because when you had the Four Horsemen going full heel, I mean, going full, running roughshod over everything, right? Well, Tully Blanchard, or say even Arn Anderson and Ole Anderson, they'd have the match in the beginning. They didn't even have Tully Blanchard, say, against Dusty Rhodes. Well, Flair had to follow those two guys. And the best match that you were going to see was going to be the Andersons against someone else because tag team was king back then. I mean, you're never going to see any better tag team wrestling than the 80s. I mean, nothing ever better than Jim Crockett Productions tag team. Never. You will never see any better tag team work ever than that. And then you'd have Tully Blanchard. Blanchard could work. And then he'd usually go against Dusty Rhodes or, say, like a Magnum TA. Now, Magnum TA is Magnum TA, but when he's going against Dusty Rhodes, that's a hell of a match. Well, Ric Flair would outperform all those guys. And he would take it upon himself. He's like, how the hell am I going to outperform these guys? He's like, well, I'm going to go what I know works because I've been wrestling for 20 years already, and I know what works, and I know how to react to the fans. So you have this whole thing with Batista, right? After the pay-per-view, he's flipping people off or whatever it is. He's getting mad at the fans for booing him. He comes out on Raw, and there's a Batista sign. He's kind of like pointing at it. He can't adjust to what it is. He's not like The Rock where everybody would, you know, The Rock had this crazy baby face run in the beginning, and everybody hated him for it. And so The Rock said, "Well, I'm going to go back to what I was at during my Hurricane days, and just be that person, and just multiply it by 100." You know, he doesn't have the personality. He doesn't have the wrestling chops. Cena doesn't have it either. Randy Orton, as good as Randy Orton's been, Randy Orton to me is kind of he is like the biggest casualty out of this whole thing, because he works the style that he knows how to do. He's still getting his feet wet of being like the guy or being like the main heel, but then he's going against these guys that can't either show him or they can't elevate the game up. And it really showed at the end of that John Cena Randy Orton match. I've seen that finish with John Cena for the past 3-4 years that I watched him wrestle. It's like, oh, what can I do? Because the crowd hates it. So, hey, I have a great idea, Randy. Hey, let's kick it out of all each other's finishers, and then I'll put your finisher on, and you put my finisher on, and the crowd's going to go nuts. I mean, come on, dude.
Yeah. Well, you're questioning their work ethic. I don't even know if it's a question of work ethic. I just don't think that they have the ability that Bray Wyatt or Daniel Bryan has. I mean, if you were to rank them in order 1 through 4, best to worst worker, I think you go Daniel Bryan's the best worker. I think Bray's the second. I think Orton's the third, and Cena's the fourth. And I just think that's
of those four guys.
I'm just comparing.
Because you're missing out on Reigns and Rollins.
I'm just comparing those two matches, right? Okay, so what do you expect these guys to do? But here's the difference. Okay, so like we're gonna talk old school wrestling. Like I'll go back to WrestleMania 3. Okay, everybody watched that Macho Man Randy Savage match and Ricky the Dragon Steamboat, and they knew that was the better match. But the thing was, Hogan and Andre, even though, I mean, it's no technical marvel, I mean, they knew how to work this crowd, they knew how to build this thing up, and they had the crowd in the palm of their hand. So even though any one of us as like want to be like, you know, smarks or whatever, say, well, Randy and Ricky had the better match, you still can't turn around and say, well, that crowd wasn't feeling what was happening.
And you can't say that about me and you either, because we knew that the Macho Man Savage and the Steamboat match was way better. Mm-hmm. But at the end of that match between Hulk Hogan and Andre the Giant, we were happy.
Yeah, and we were still in awe of what happened.
Exactly.
Because they did something that no one had seen before. But Randy Orton and John Cena, they don't have the next year. They just don't. And the crowd, and that's the thing. The crowd's not even buying it anymore. And that's where I think that there's really a problem. Because back in the day, you're comparing to the 80s wrestling and stuff like that. That crowd still bought into whoever those guys were at the top of the card because they had earned those spots. And these guys, I mean, I agree with you. I think Randy Orton has earned the ability to be in this position. But Cena's just so stale at this point. And I think he's actually doing some of the better work that I've seen out of him in quite some time.
I would wholeheartedly agree.
But he's not a compelling character at all, and nobody cares about him anymore.
I think that the problem with Cena, and we've been trying to answer this question for a long time, and now that I'm actually have a little bit of respect for Cena, what he's done over the past 3-4 months. I thought Cena coming back was going to be the death knell for this guy. You know, it's like, man, no, there's no way. But he came back, and he worked his ass off. And he does work his ass off. But you're right, he doesn't have the chops. And it's just the whole package.
Yeah, like, yeah, sorry, not to cut you off, but Cena never became the guy because he worked his way to the top. Cena became the guy because everybody else that was the guy left. And he was last man standing. And I think that's a pretty solid statement to make. Rock took off. Austin got hurt. Brock Lesnar left. They didn't have anybody else. Undertaker was slowing down, right? I mean, he did not earn his way to the top. He was just, well, this is the guy we got. This is what we're going to go with. You know, he was able to have the good matches, some good matches with Randy Orton, I think, and a pretty good feud with Edge. But those guys, and Edge really, I mean, Edge really elevated him, right? But there was no main guy. Even Edge was a guy that, you know, was never a surefire thing. This guy was going to make it to the top. And so, you know, he didn't have to go through all these guys to prove that he really deserved to be the main guy, like Hogan did, like Flair did, like Bret Hart did, like Steve Austin, like The Rock. And now, you know, they're just stuck with this idea, well, you know, we rode him this long and we've made this much out of the guy. So, you know, I guess they're going to try to squeeze everything they can get out of him. But I say, if in 5 years this is the same formula and it's still relying on John Cena and a bunch of dudes coming out for one-offs at WrestleMania,
we're not watching.
I don't think I would be.
Yeah, I don't think I will be either. And, yeah, here's, you know, I really like the point that you brought up with WrestleMania 3. And then when you cut me off at a good spot, it made me think about this too, is that these guys with the main event, like Hogan and Andre, that felt like a heavyweight fight. You know, as that was like a Mike Tyson fight. It was like you were on the edge of your seat because something had to give. And we knew Hogan was going to win, but everything that Andre did and everything that Hogan did.
Andre just had that whole mystique still going.
Yeah, he still had it, and Hogan still has mystique too. And here's the difference with the whole thing was that Hogan, as bad as he was in the ring, could cut a flipping promo like crazy. At that time. Man. At that time, he was the best promo cutter for the 80s. I mean, tailor-made for the 80s. Well, Cena's not tailor-made for anything. I mean, Cena's coming out in his neon stuff. He's doing the whole kind of throwback.
He's tailor-made to host, like, Saturday morning cartoons.
Or Saturday morning superstars or something like that. You know, Orton, I'm not going to take any away. I mean, there's a small part. Orton is playing the role that he has to play. He's playing it very good. But he can't expand on it. You know, he can't, like, do something just a little bit more just to kind of really kind of get you mad. You know, he doesn't have that. And I'm not saying that he never will. I think he's learning. Cena can't cut a promo unless the story is done the right way. And the only time that Cena cut a good promo that I've seen so far was when they had a unification match. I thought he cut a great promo during that time. Even though everything was wrong in the promo, you know, he was basically talking about himself and not talking about Randy Orton. But he cut a very good promo. But they had one of the best finishes to Raw ever with the whole fighting and who was involved. Who are the two guys that were involved in that? What elevated Cena, you know, with that promo that he did? Daniel Bryan came out. CM Punk came out. There was beef between Triple H and CM Punk, and then Daniel Bryan gets kind of like the last send off. So he can't cut the promo on the mic to make you want to watch. Where Andre wasn't a great promo guy. I mean, yeah, he did have that mystique because he was the largest guy in the flipping world, yeah. And he had the help of Bobby
Heenan talk for him.
And then you had Hogan at the same time, and you had this great promo work that made us when it's like that's the match that we wanted to see. It's like. I think I remember you had the table like let's fast forward it to the I think we might have fast forwarded to that last match first, right? We might have watched it first and it was a long time ago, but I think we maybe fast forwarded to it and then we started from the beginning and watched the whole thing and we saw that match for a second time. And I was still enthralled that second time I saw it. It was like every little move that they did, which there weren't a lot of moves, but they had emphasis behind everything because you're like, oh, like this is the, you know, because the promo work was so good. The story itself was so good with Dave Hebner and Earl Hebner. It just, everything just came to a head. It's like my dad, who never watched wrestling at all, he put on Saturday Night Main Event, and that's when I became a fan. That's when I started watching wrestling, because Hebner comes out, and I went on Monday morning, and we started talking about that match at school. You know, not me and you, but, you know. So it's like it brought my dad, who, you know, who hates wrestling, but he watched it because he read something in the paper. It was in a newspaper saying that, hey, you know, this is all predetermined because the main event for WrestleMania is going to be this two match for the title or whatever it was. So he wanted to watch to see what it was, right? Mm-hmm. Cena doesn't have that. The story wasn't there. Even though, you know, if you're going to have Michael Cole saying this is the biggest thing, then you know for a fact. The second that Michael Cole says this is the biggest thing ever, you know it's not.
I'll throw another difference in there since you brought him up. You had Mean Gene conducting interviews with Hulk Hogan, who could play perfectly off of Mean Gene. And Heenan and Mean Gene had that going. Michael Cole's just a suit. I mean, Michael Cole's not good. So I'll back you up there. Yeah, like Michael Cole just says ridiculous stuff. Oh, man, about 50 times in the Royal Rumble. But I think that's also undersold, like how well a guy, you know, conducting the interviews can be, or how good these broadcasters can be to elevate. And their broadcast pretty much sucks right now. Layfield, I like. You know, he goes out on a limb sometimes, but I think what you're saying is correct about him. Like, he's kind of tweaking people, like, and cheering for stuff that he thinks is stupid, being sarcastic. But Michael Cole and Lawler are really bad, and they're not helping the product at all either.
Yeah, I agree with that. You know, I wish back from the days of Jim Ross, not just because Jim Ross is good, but Jim Ross made the King way better. Yeah. You know, there's a chemistry that those two had.
Well, Ross, I mean, sorry, Lawler was fine when he was a heel, but he's been just an abomination as a babyface announcer.
Yeah.
Even with Ross, he was going way downhill when they turned him face. And, I mean, this is not like some call to bring back JR, though, you know. I'm all for listening to JR call matches, but I'm not saying like, oh, you need to bring JR back because these guys are bad. I'm just saying those two guys are not good, and Josh Matthews sucks as well.
Yeah,
Miz is terrible.
Riley's not too bad.
I think Riley's okay. Yeah, he's
but they stick with that that pencil neck geek. Yeah, I don't even know what that guy's name
is.
Yeah,
I don't either. But Riley, like when it's Riley and somebody that's competent, Riley's fine.
Yeah,
but a lot of wrestling, a lot of what we grew up watching, was really enhanced by the broadcast.
Yeah.
We've talked about, you know, when McMahon was calling matches and with Monsoon or with Jesse Ventura, you know, those guys were great. When Dusty was fun to listen to. I mean, Schiavone was terrible.
Yeah. And we're going to talk about Schiavone pretty soon.
Are we?
Yeah.
Okay.
So, and here's kind of the other thing that really, I don't, you know, really I can't wrap my head around, right? WWE in the past, and here's the whole thing, is that the jury's still out on this whole Daniel Bryan thing. Maybe they're going to have this big chase, and I'm borrowing from The Masked Man, you know, like, you know, the chase is better than the kill, right? So maybe they're just slowly building up Daniel Bryan, building him up. Maybe we don't see it at WrestleMania. Maybe we see it maybe next SummerSlam. And maybe everything that we talk about, you know, and all the frustration that we have, it's like we finally get to see him do it. So the jury's still not out yet on this whole thing. Maybe they're doing something that's wishful thinking. I just don't know how you are not going to have your biggest kind of kill moment or yes moment, if you will, right? I don't know how you're not going to do that at WrestleMania. I don't know why you're going to have your biggest show, what's supposed to be the biggest show of the year, and you're going to have a card that nobody cares about. And then SummerSlam really is really like the pay-per-view of the year, because that's what everything happens that you want to see, right? So I don't want to get into that, but that's just where I'm coming from with that. But the WWE has had a history of pushing a small guy, pushing a guy that nobody thinks that can carry a company, right? They did that with Shawn Michaels, okay? Shawn Michaels was one of the best champions of all time, but a lot of it had to do because he was a small guy. He was the underdog every time. His athleticism took over. Daniel Bryan has more athleticism than Shawn Michaels does. He's a better technician than Michaels ever was. They pushed Benoit. Benoit didn't have a great run as a champion, but it was his time. You know, he put his work in. They finally gave a bone to flipping Chris Benoit, and they let the quote unquote small guy become a champion. It's like here's your reward for all these years of the business treating you wrong, right? And I'm just going like, well, Daniel Bryan is following the same path. How come they can't give that to Daniel Bryan?
It goes back to Move to Scale Episode 1, competition. If WCW didn't exist at the time when they gave Benoit his run, he would not have gotten that run. And neither would Eddie Guerrero, and perhaps neither would a Chris Jericho. Okay, but they knew they had to put the best guy they had on top and give him a run, because they knew that was going to beat the other company that they were in competition with. And that's really all there is to it. Like, if you had Benoit going right now and, like, entering his prime right now, he would not get his run. I mean, he would just get buried like everybody else. And that's what the problem is.
So they're making decisions, and so if we can wrap this up very nicely, they're making decisions not based on competition. They're making decisions based on what they think their ego is. Like, everything's ego-driven, right? Like, you're asking, well, why is Sting coming back? The reason why they want to sign Sting...
I don't know why they want to sign merchandise,
but at the same time, they said, hey, you know, like, you've had a great career, right? But you're never going to have the career, you know... In order for you to become an all-time great, like you think you are, you have to come work for us. You cannot be an all-time great without working for us. And if they get Sting, like, we finally got you. You've been ducking us this whole time. You've had plenty of opportunities to come over here. You've always stayed with WCW or TNA or whatever it was. Like, you have finally seen the light, and you're finally working for our company because you realize that our company is the best. And that's why they're signing Sting. Merchandise will have stuff to do with it, but a lot of it's ego-driven. It's like, hey, you know, you've had a great career, and you thought that you would never have to work for us. Well, you do have to work for us, because look what happened to you and look what happened in WCW. It folded, and you were like the flagship of WCW. You failed. You were the flagship of TNA for a while. You failed. Well, now you have to come with us. Now you have to work for us, right?
Sure.
That's why they're doing it. So that's the whole thing. It's like, there's no competition. So CM Punk, no competition. Everything is ego driven. Either you know, it's not a case of CM Punk taking his ball and going home. They're going like, well, you definitely have the ball, but the only way you can play is you have to use our court. You mm-hmm. can't go anywhere else.
Right.
And the whole thing is, if CM Punk goes Ring of Honor or whatever it is, then maybe I start watching Ring of Honor. You know, so
Do you think CM Punk has enough cachet right now to go to, let's say, Ring of Honor and make that into something that...
I don't think he wants to, you know? No. I don't think this is a case of Hulk Hogan, Kevin Nash, and Scott Hall saying, hey, we can overtake this company and beat this company. I don't think there's a hatred that CM Punk has where he's going to go into ROH and say, I'm going to make ROH better than WWE. I think if he goes to ROH, he does it because he loves to wrestle. And I think a lot of CM Punk is a lot different from everybody else, right? CM Punk likes to entertain. And you can entertain on a grander scale in an ROH arena than you can in a WWE arena. Because you're gonna have more card, you know, he can go in there and pretty much dictate what he wants to do. Now, he's not gonna ask for a guaranteed contract or whatever. I don't mean that. He's not gonna ask for like creative control with his own character. You know, mm-hmm. he's going to do business that he wants to do, but he can pick and choose what he wants to do.
Right.
And but, if he, go ahead.
Right. I agree with what you're saying. But that said, I mean, do you think that he has become such a big star and also has this thing that, you know, he doesn't feel like he has to work WWE to do what he wants to do? Do you think him leaving, do you think he has enough of a following at this point that could create some waves, that could do something?
No.
No,
I don't think ROH is prepared to do anything on a grand scale, and I don't think that's the way CM Punk works. I mean, I think I see CM Punk a lot like Cassius Ohno or Chris Hero. You know, it's like they do it because they enjoy the craft, they enjoy wrestling, and I think they, you know, it's kind of like, you know, I had a great career as a journalist, right? I mean, I was like getting into middle management, and I was having a great time doing what I was doing. And when the paper folded, it's like, okay, I can go back and work at some other paper. But I just didn't care. It didn't make me happy. So I'm doing a job now that doesn't utilize any of my talents, doesn't utilize any of my the skills that I acquired in college or even the 10 years that I spent in the business, right? I am so misunderused in what I do now, but I enjoy what I do. I enjoy it. And I had to go to another paper to buy the house that we're in right now, and I hated the job. And when I got the house, I quit. I did what I'm doing now, and I loved it. Because it wasn't an ego thing with me anymore. You know, like before, everything was ego driven. It's like, hey, I was at 30 years old, I was leading the sports design team in one of the top 15 papers in the country. I was the flipping man. I was probably one of the top 25 designers in the whole United States, right? Really ego driven with me. But when I reached that pinnacle, I wasn't happy. You know, what made me happy was my family, taking my kids to school. That's what makes me happy. And that's why I do what I do now. It's because, not because it challenges me or I can walk around and go, hey, you know, I'm a regional territory manager, but it's like, I could care less. I'm like, this is just an end to the means. I make money at it. I live a comfortable lifestyle. That's the way I think CM Punk is. That's the way I think Chris Hero is.
Yeah. No, I don't disagree. I mean, I don't think he would go there with the intent that he thinks he's going to break WWE. But I'm just wondering if there could be a product that could, you know, he has built up.
But
a
the
brand.
True fan, but the true fans are already watching Ring of Honor. You know, fans like more devoted fans than me and you are already watching Ring of Honor.
Well, I would be watching it if I could, but I'm not going to pay for it.
Yeah, but there's people that do pay for it,
right?
You know, so I mean, I think if Ring of Honor wants to try to broker a TV deal with CM Punk and Cassius Ohno, I think they can, and all they have to point to. You say, okay, we just tweeted that CM Punk versus Chris Hero is going to be tonight, and it's going to trend. It's going to trend, be one of the top five trends on Twitter, right? It's like, well, we're, you know, the base is here. Let's get a deal done because you're going to make money. And you're going to make money off of CM Punk. I think they can do that, but I don't think that's going to happen. I don't even know if CM Punk is going to wrestle anymore.
I would think he would go do Ring of Honor, and I would think.
And then let's bring in Samoa Joe.
I think
and
he'd
all
go
stuff.
Into Japan too. I think he'd go back to Japan and do.
Yeah, and I think he would go crazy in Japan.
Yeah,
I mean he would. I mean Japan would go nuts for this guy. So okay, so let's finish it up there. We're already an hour in. Hey man, good job today, Dave. You know you're on all cylinders, man. And I'm waiting for you to say something about me. Not going to happen. So let's talk about the Bray Wyatt. And because usually what we do is we bring up like matches that we've watched in the past. But let's talk about that Bray Wyatt match and Daniel Bryan match. I really liked that match, and the reason why I liked it was Bryant was just dominating in the beginning, just dominating, and then it was like a classic like Lakers versus Celtics, you know, back in the 80s. We're bringing up a lot of sports analogies here, but it was like Lakers versus Celtics, right? It's like Lakers were super fast, right? Just, you know, fast breaks here and there, dunks, open court dunks on a fast break, and then Boston would just slow it down to that half court, and you had this great kind of confrontation between fast break points and then, you know, slowing it down and stuff. And over the course of time, Magic learned how to play a half court game, but he still had that fast break potential, and that's when the Lakers started really kind of taking over. Their athleticism started taking over. I felt this was like kind of the same thing. Daniel Bryan really just started the tone for that match. It was just taking over everything, and the best thing that ever happened in that match is when they kicked the
Wyatt.
Yeah, it's just like, okay, the second that they kicked those two guys out, I knew Bray was going to win, and I loved it. I was like, this guy is going to win. And what happens is that Bray slows it down, and then, man, he had so many good spots. And the first good spot he had was the senton that he used to do with Husky Harris on the floor. Flipping epic move, dude. I mean, it was like, that's what I wanted to see from this guy forever, right? And then, of course, he has his full-on football body tackle. It's just like his kamikaze like tackle that he does. Mm-hmm. That was the second great spot. And then it picks up fast again with Daniel Bryan. And then Daniel Bryan has to slow down to make the match good with Bray and really show what Bray can do. I just thought it was a great match.
Yeah, the reverse out of the first Sister Abigail was really good. Some good false finishes. Bray Wyatt, he's just funny, man. Like he can talk good in the ring, like when he's bad mouthing the fans or Daniel Bryan, like it's good. And I don't know about
what's even better is hearing you talk like Bray Wyatt. Hey, John Cena, man. Only hillbillies wear jorts, man.
So like the match was good. Yeah, and the thing that was nice about it is they gave it the time that it deserved to play itself out. And that's the thing. Like all the things you're saying is like, you know, I didn't sit and think about exactly why I liked the match. I just enjoyed the match. But you can only do all the things that you're talking about if you give them a full 30 minutes or so to do this match. You know, if it's like a regular Raw match where they've got 15 minutes to work and five of it's a commercial break, you don't get to see all that. They don't have time to develop that fast pace, slow pace, and all of that stuff. And that's what it really, I thought, you got two guys that can really work. Their psychology is great. They have a very moveset of power moves. And even though, like, Bray Wyatt's kind of a power guy, he's still really athletic. And you give it the full time that it deserves to come to a satisfying ending. And that's what you get with that match.
Daniel Bryan was really good in that match, right? Typical Daniel Bryan match. And he brought out, like Daniel Bryan always does, he brought out the best in Bray Wyatt. But it wasn't like Bray was just sitting there, like some geek off the street.
Right, he was the equal
partner. He was doing stuff in the whole walking on his, walking on his hands upside down, or whatever it was, you know, the kind of like the, I think my youngest daughter really liked it because, you know, she teaches like kids yoga, right? So that's like the one move she always shows off. That is, I think it's like called a bridge or something. I think I called it something else. Like, oh no, that's a bridge.
The bridge is over. Yeah, the bridge is over.
So just like little things like that, and you're like, dude, like what the hell is this guy doing? Mm-hmm. And it's like, you know, it really plays into his character. It's like it can be seen as like something like not scary, but like pretty freaky. You know, it's like kind of like Exorcist type level. You know, like this guy, like what the hell is this guy doing? Right. It's like, you know, if you're just like to turn on, you know, and not watch the whole match and not know anything about Bray Wyatt, or maybe this is the first time you've seen him, and you see this guy walking like that with a crazed look on his face, it's like, yeah, that works pretty good.
Yeah.
And then the spot, you know, and then the Sister Abigail spot of Daniel Bryan jumping out of the ring and him catching him and hitting him into the wall. It's like, dude, I'm like, yeah, that was a spot that they planned. I said, but fuck, was that good?
Yeah, you know? It was smooth. It wasn't like, oh, you know, here he goes outside, so this is what's going to happen next. Yeah, it was spur of the moment, and it was new. So that was the thing. They can go creative and do everything's not a high spot. I didn't see anybody kick out of anybody's finisher. I mean, I think Daniel Bryan kicked out after that, but it was a believable amount of time before the cover actually happened.
Yeah,
you know, they don't have to go to the same old thing that me and you have been watching for 30 some odd years now in wrestling, and
the Hulk Hogan effect.
Yeah, and it works. And the kick out of, oh, let me do a Sister Abigail on you now, Bray. Oh, why don't you put me in the yes lock, Daniel? Okay. You know, they don't have to go to all those regurgitated spots, and that's why the match, you know, it's something that we haven't seen.
Well, even that Sister Abigail move, it's protected right now. You know, he's kicked out of it, and it shouldn't be ever kicked out of. Just like Daniel Bryan's knee kick, that should never be kicked out of either. I think he put it on him, but then he went out of the ring or something like that, right? And then that's what set up that spot. Maybe that's what happened, but when he put the Sister Abigail on after the dive, when Bryan dived outside the ring, and he put it on, it's like, yeah, the match is done. It's over. And he puts him in the ring. I don't even think he does another move after that, and he pins him. Pins him clean in the ring. No outside interference. And it's like, you can do that with those two guys.
Well, I think he got out of the one on the wall.
Did he?
And then he got him with a second Sister Abigail.
Okay.
But I think, like I was saying, there was enough time that passed from how long it took him to roll Bryan in and cover that it was a believable kick out. It wasn't like one of these, like, oh, here's my finisher, and you kick right out 2 seconds later.
Yeah.
Like, it made sense. Everything that happened made sense. There was actual logic to the match.
So I'm going to break something different, unless you have a really compelling guy. But instead of Hall of Kayfabe, we're going to introduce, at Muda Skill 63, we're going to introduce the Hall of Shame. And this is something where somebody does something so bad, and we don't have to do it every week. But I think, you know, right now, kayfabe, we're trying to scramble to get guys. When we put a lot of guys in every single week, you know, for the past, like, what, 30 podcasts?
Probably.
So, Hall of Shame, and this is where Shivani comes in.
Okay.
Shivani calling the Bash at the Beach is probably the worst piece of work. And now, Shivani's had a ton of them. But what makes this so bad was that this is one of the earmarked matches of wrestling. You know, there's, like, 5 or 6 wrestling matches that you remember. Well, this is one of them. He was so bad in this match. Just so bad. And the thing was that he had help. You know, he had Dusty Rhodes and he had Bobby the Brain. They were on top of their game that day. And it's just, you know, the constant, like, what are we going to do? If this guy wins, what are we going to do? And he's like, hey, you know, it's like, we normally don't call the match this way, he's all, but, you know, get him, you know, and, you know, cheat, you know, like, bring a bat or something. He's like, hey, he's like, you know what, like, if Lex Luger is hurt, he's like, you know, I think he didn't say it, but someone said, like, you know, no, he might have said it. If it's bad, Shivani probably said it. But he's like, instead of, you know, Lex Luger, he's like, bring someone else from out back there, you know. They don't play by the rules. We shouldn't have to play by the rules either. It's just really bad. And then, the two coup de graces, or the coup de grace, but the two, there's two of them that was so bad. One of them was, it was Sting. Yeah, so Sting, he's fighting against Kevin Nash, and first of all, I want to say, Nash, I feel bad for you, because I knew when Roman Reigns tried to throw you out, you wanted to catch yourself on the ropes and bring yourself back in. You just couldn't do it. So that was a little botched there. So, but Nash, you know what? He's old. He's older. You know, any mistake that he makes, it's okay, because he's flipping Kevin Nash. And we forget how good Kevin Nash was. But so he was the whole big giant guy, right? Huge guy in the ring. Everybody forgets how big this guy was, right?
Yeah.
So Sting does the drop kick to the knee, which you have to do against a giant, right?
Uh-huh.
Shivani comes out and says, he got kicked in the stomach. Like, is the knee the stomach? And then so
in the NFL, it could be.
Yeah. Yeah. If your name's Drew Brees. Or if you're going against the 49ers, or if you rip your flipping knee out and don't get the flipping fumble on that. But
the knee could be considered the neck area.
Yeah. So it's like, yeah, he kicked him in the stomach. I'm like, all right, dude. Take some anatomy classes. So as bad as that was, so when the match is all over, right? Because you kind of read the transcripts from what Shivani said, because they kind of bring it up, you know, when you read something online. And Shivani says something to the effect of, like, Hulk Hogan, you can go to hell. Yeah. You can go straight to hell.
Yeah.
Well, you know how he delivered it? He said, Hulk Hogan, go to hell. Hulk Hogan, you can go straight to hell. Just like that. It was the worst.
The Joe Buck emotion?
Yeah. It was worse than Joe Buck. I mean, Joe Buck took lessons from this guy. It was the worst commentating performance that I've ever heard. And Shivani, that says a lot about Shivani, because Shivani was terrible. That, by far, kills that match. It's like, I'm watching this match and I am just laughing when I'm not supposed to be laughing on how bad this guy is. It's just so, so bad. If you get a chance, go back and listen to it, or watch the match again and just listen to that commentary. You haven't seen the match in a long time.
Probably about a year or so.
Yeah, and you could call that match way better than that guy could, without knowing any of the spots. That's how bad this guy was.
I mean, I always felt like I could have called a match better than Shivani. I don't think that's any great compliment, but I do thank you.
Yeah,
I could never stand Shivani. Just really, really irritating. Nothing clever. Nothing ever clever. I mean,
wrestling fans.
Yeah. Well, it's like, you know, you got these. I know he's supposed to be the straight guy. But, you know, you could be clever every once in a while. It's not against the rules.
But, you see, the thing was, he wasn't being the straight guy. He was totally biased.
He was attempting...
No, yeah, well, he was attempting biasness towards... Yeah. Yeah, and it was... He's so bad at it that it didn't work. It is the worst performance by any wrestling announcer ever. And I've heard some pretty bad wrestling announcers. Worse than the dude that used to sell baseball cards.
I was
going to
say, you're throwing him down worse than Don West?
That match, yes. Don West would have run circles around that guy during that match.
What about Stagger Lee Marshall, though?
Yeah, I like Stagger Lee. Stagger on that here. So, Moon Scale 63, we're hitting the 110 mark. I think we're done, right? Looking pretty good. Nothing else really to talk about, right? Took care of all the things we need to take care of?
Yeah.
All the segments?
Sure,
yeah.
Sure.
I did want to do kind of a Price is Right, you know, thing to Raw. You know, do you remember the Raw lineup this Monday?
I don't know. Del Rio fought Kofi.
Okay, so opens up with the Authority and Daniel Bryan. Did I fast forward or did I watch it?
I say you watched.
I watched it, and then you had, was it Del Rio and Kofi?
That wasn't next.
It was next. Okay, so but Del Rio and Kofi. You think I fast forwarded that or watched it?
Fast forwarded
that one. The Divas match. Do you think I fast-forwarded that or watched it?
I say you watched AJ walk to the ring and then fast-forwarded.
You'd be right about that. and then when when what's her name Oksana was crawling around the ring, I stopped and watched her do it. She's growing on me a little bit.
That's the second time you mentioned that.
That's more than the second time. It's probably about the third or fourth. But she's growing on me a little bit. The other one was the Real Americans versus whoever they fought. With the Primetime Players, maybe? What was it?
I think it was Mysterio and... Not Mysterio, it was Sin Cara and a partner.
Yeah, Sin Cara and Mysterio.
Was it Mysterio?
Yeah.
Okay.
Did I fast forward that or watch that?
Fast forward.
I fast forward until I saw Zeb Coulter slap him. Then I started watching. Yeah. And I rewound a little bit to figure out what was going on. Then you had Batista, Brock Lesnar, and all that jazz. Fast forward or watch that?
You watched when Paul Heyman was talking.
No, I fast forwarded that part too.
Fast forwarded Heyman.
I fast forwarded Heyman.
Tired of Heyman right now?
I'm not tired of Heyman. I'm just tired of the storyline. Okay. Oh, was there any? Was there? So you had the Fandango match.
I know you've been enjoying Fandango recently. I don't remember who you wrestled. I'm gonna say you watched it.
Fast forward to that one.
Okay.
The Miz versus Dolph Ziggler.
Fast forward
to that one. And then, so pretty much everyone I fast forward, and then we get to the 6-man tag match. What did I do there?
I'm saying you watched it and got pissed at the end.
I fell asleep, so I had to watch it the next day.
And did you get pissed at the end?
Nah, I didn't get pissed at the end. I mean, I knew which three guys were going in the Elimination Chamber. I thought it was fine. It was a good match. I enjoyed it. I fell asleep. That's the one match I wanted to watch. I fell asleep. The other one was New Age Outlaws versus the Rose Brothers.
You watched it.
I watched that by far. Yeah. So good. And now you get into the final showdown or whatever it is, and you get overbid by like $123 and lose.
Okay.
Okay. Good. All right. So move to skill number 63.
Oh, you gonna ask me the question?
What was the question?
I don't know. I thought I was gonna get a final showdown showcase.
No. I just said that you're gonna. Okay. Bad News Barrett on the mic. Did I watch it?
Yes.
Hell yes, I watched that. Hell yes! Hell yes! That was my Shivani impersonation. Hell yes!
You can't get up here, Miz!
that was last week.
Sorry.
All right, so Move Skill 63. We have some great work by my boy, Better Have My Donuts over here on Bad News Ramen. We will check you out next week.
You did pretty good too, Bad News Ramen.
Thank you. Hey, good job. But I got some bad news. All right, so Move Skill 63. Bad news is that we're finishing up. Probably the bad news is that we'll be here next week. You never know. And we'll talk to you later and see what goes on from there.